You are listening to the Dan Patrick Show on Fox Sports Radio.
I mean, this is, you talk about outrage. I'm insulted, offended, appalled by what we heard. It should be a celebration, but unfortunately, somebody had to ruin it with some post-game commentary. We will get into all of the controversy coming up here in just a couple of moments from now. It is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, no.
I'm Jonas Knox.
The drama.
He's LeVar Arrington.
The dramatics.
That guy over there is Brady Quinn.
What up, though?
You can
not
hang out with
us, as always,
on the iHeartRadio app and wherever you are, making us a part of your Monday morning. Happy Labor Day to you and yours. We're going to take you all the way up until noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific. And LeVar, before we just go ahead and all have a fun discussion here and make light of a controversy that shouldn't be a controversy, let's just go ahead and get this out of the way. Here we go. It's celebration time. Let's get it out of the way. There you go, Brady.
There you go.
We're going to get them all fired up, that Brady Quinn. Come on, Brady, I mean, no Quinn.
You've got to play both the Notre Dame and Penn State fight song.
It's all good. We'll let you have this moment.
Yeah, come on, Brady.
That was a big win for
you
guys.
Big time.
I don't know about a big win.
Right.
Huge.
I think it was, if you're going to have a game like that,
massive,
it's best to come out on top.
Gigantic
which they did.
Win.
Well, so, it was a bigger loss for Florida State than it was a big win for number 9 ranked Notre Dame. Yeah. I mean,
right.
But
rankings at this point, I mean, you can throw them out the window. Outside of Alabama. Outside of Alabama, who should be number 1 by far and away right now based on how they looked.
Hey, but what's crazy is Florida State actually looked like Florida State last night. I mean, I got to be honest with you.
What do you mean with the missed field goal?
Yes. Yes, they was good. They were good enough for a missed field goal to matter. I mean, if you really think about it, they pushed it wide left. It usually, historically, it was wide right.
What was it, 3 straight times?
Which I thought was very peculiar that they did not even set it up or highlight. They were so busy talking about Buddy's leg and his knee.
Yeah.
They talked about it for the entire time he was in the game. The entire time. Not what plays he made, not what it meant to the game or whatever. It's just all about the kid's leg. I thought it was going to be interesting for them to parallel that moment of the game to all of the – like those – you're talking about Notre Dame kept Florida State from winning a national title off of some of these missed kicks, right? And they didn't say anything about it.
And the Miami-Florida State games were always wide right, wide left. It always seemed like it came down to it.
But that was Notre Dame. Like, there's a famous moment in time where Florida State misses and loses to Notre Dame.
So they wanted to talk about Mackenzie Milton's, return to action. I mean, that's a big moment, LeVar. I don't know why you're so heartless about it. Why do you have to be so heartless?
We need to execute those people. Who,
oh, come on.
We need to execute those people. People who did not
say that.
They did not
say that.
Wait, there was a lack of execution on that moment. It was a missed moment.
No!
They needed to execute the people that didn't do it.
Can I be honest with you about that quote?
Yes.
I was more offended by the fact that Coach Kelly used a quote from a USC head coach than I was with what he said. Like, that was more offensive. I heard they didn't even take the plane back. They didn't need to, apparently, after the game.
Yeah. Well,
there's no one to take back to South Bend.
A lot of leg room, you know?
Is this the world we live in now?
It's crazy, man.
I understand we're all soft. Everyone's offended. But come on. Like, if you don't know history, you don't know the background of it, go educate yourself, you know? Go educate. And I think for most Notre Dame fans, their perspective is we were up 18. We were up 18. Florida State did nothing to come back into that football game. I hate to rain on their parade. There was a lack of execution. There was a lack of defensive play call. LeVar, I know you watched the game.
I did.
There had to have been a point where Florida State continually ran the ball down their throat, and you're looking at Notre Dame playing with a 5-man box, 5 men around the line of scrimmage to stop the run. Well, obviously, they're going to run the football down your throat if that's your defensive game plan by Marcus Freeman. So there was a lot of reasons I think you could look at that game and say Notre Dame gave a lot of that away. The Michael Mayer drops early on a third down, late in the game too, where it would have put them in position to end it in regulation. There was a lot of things I think you could look at and go, there's instances where Notre Dame could have put that away, and they didn't. The fact that Florida State hung in there, credit to them, credit to Mike Norvell. But I think both sides are looking at that film today, probably pretty disappointed in some of the execution.
Yeah, well, I'll say this. Out of everything that I didn't remember from that game, Kyle Hamilton is a name that I will remember from that name from that game. I haven't seen a guy, and I love doing this because people get so upset when I do it. It was Sean Taylor-esque.
Yeah.
To go from one, like, if you understand football, for a kid to have the savvy, the awareness, the understanding, and then the athleticism and the ability to do what that kid did on that play where he was on the opposite hash.
He was the opposite safety in quarters.
He was playing the opposite hash, read the quarterback all the way through, turned the jets on because the quarterback was committed to doing what he was going to do, and got a pick on the opposite sideline. And then took his helmet off. It was so Jewish. It was so Jewish. It was as Jewish as it gets, and it was in a Notre Dame uniform. But let me tell you something. That kid is a guy. He is a guy. I was so impressed with him, man.
Yeah.
He just kept showing up.
Well, and he has since he got to Notre Dame. I remember seeing him a couple years ago as a freshman, and I told people then – I said, he's gone.
Sheesh.
Enjoy him while you got him, because he's gone in 3 years. He's got those natural ball instincts. And that's the funny thing, is that particular play, he bailed out the cornerback on that side of the field.
Yes, he did, because he undercut it.
Yeah, and it usually never happens. Like, it never happens where the backside safety is running across the field. Like, maybe the safety on that side of the field, because he's got his quarters deep, you know, this deep quadrant of the field. You never see that. So the way he played, honestly, I think kind of bailed out Marcus Freeman at times.
Oof.
You know, it really did, if you look at that debut for Notre Dame's defense, which I think if you look at their old defensive coordinator, Clark Lee, went to Vanderbilt. They just lost to East Tennessee State, I think. So maybe he wishes he could come back at this point in time. But I just – that game, as a Notre Dame fan, as much as you're happy to come away with a win, and there's some things to build off of. Clearly, Jack Cohn, the way he played, the downfield passing game. What about Kevin Austin? What about some of these receivers they've got now that they can stretch the field vertically? There's something to be said about that. But concerns about the O-line going into the game, still coming out of it, defensively, all that. There's a lot of things to work on, I think, for a team that has aspirations to get back to the playoffs.
I just love that they keep giving the ACC that work. Just keep giving them the work. Just, we'll let you in for 1 year. Cool, we're in your championship game, and we beat Clemson last year. And then they open up this year, and they beat Florida State. By the way, the Bobby Bowden fedora on the field, nice touch.
That was awesome.
Now, you mentioned the Brian Kelly comments. So John McKay had a legendary quote years ago. I think this is when he was the coach of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, when they were 0-16. They were a winless football team, and John McKay said, they asked him, so what do you think of your team's execution? He said, I'm in favor of it. All right, so one of the great all-time coach lines in history of football. But Brian Kelly afterwards spoke with ABC and tried to give his version of it, but it came out like this.
I'm in favor of execution. Maybe our entire team needs to be executed after tonight. I mean, we just didn't execute very well.
Just think,
he just fell in love with trying to play on execute.
And look, but there are going to be people.
He looked into her eyes. And
he was trying to be funny.
He was really trying to like charm her and shoot a shot at her, and it was a bad moment. It was like one of them Joe Namath moments. I want to get you.
He was more like looking up at her. Katie George is tall, man.
Yeah, well,
yeah, it was more like looking.
He was
up,
all
like,
in. He was all looking up in her eyes, like I just want to kiss you. Kiss you in the face, in the mouth.
I'm not going to go that far. No, I just think we've gotten to a point where, like, you can't try to be funny. You really can't, because everyone gets offended by something. Like, I think in that instance, you just give credit to the opponent, and then you compliment Mackenzie Milton. You know, they knew what he was overcoming to come into that game, and they knew that, like, that was going to be something that, you know, even the opposing coach should acknowledge, you know, what he overcame to give himself an opportunity to play and then jump into that game in that spot and play well. Like, I think the interesting thing moving forward for Florida State is, if you win the game, the decision next week for who your quarterback's going to be versus Jacksonville State. No. If Florida State won, I think it's easy.
Oh, you go with McKenzie Milton. With McKenzie, yeah.
Yeah, but because they lost, now I think you have to look back and go, all right, I mean, Jordan Travis did help get us back.
He had us
back
in the game, yeah.
And McKenzie Milton helped as well, but regardless, whoever starts next week, you know they're going to ball. Yeah. Like, they're playing against a lesser opponent.
Right.
You know they're going to play well. So it's almost like whatever decision they make, they're going to have to ride that out for a little while because of who their opponent is and I think how good that guy is going to look. So I just think that would have been more of the, you know, give credit, storyline, everything else to a team that, look, played them tough, and maybe the spirit of Bobby Bowden was there. You know, it's funny. My mom hit me up before the game. I completely forgot about this because we had talked about Bobby Bowden before. We played him my freshman year. And we got absolutely drummed back in 2003. They came to South Bend.
What happened?
Crothonzo Thorpe, I think, set a single game record for, like, receiving yards against us. One of the Bullwares was doing, like, those backflip things you linebackers do. I'll never forget, in blitz pickup, one of our running backs, I think it was Ryan Grant, he went to take on a linebacker, and the dude just jumped over him. Like, I'd never seen anything like that before. But after the game...
I'm going to send you some of my film.
Yeah, there you go.
Go ahead.
Yeah. No, those Penn State linebackers weren't the same when I played them, buddy. They weren't the same.
You're right.
But Bobby Bowden sent me a letter. He had a handwritten letter and just kind of told me to keep my head up, keep working hard.
That's awesome.
You know, he could kind of see the, you know, the greatness and all that. So it was just cool to be able to. Like, my mom helped me relive that. She's the one who kept that note. I completely forgot about it. And so, like, before the game, she called me and just we had a quick conversation. She was kind of reading through it. And she was like, you know, what a special man to be able to recognize that in another player on another team. Granted, they won, so it's kind of probably easy to write that letter. But that's what I think should have been the conversation after the game, at least for Coach Kelly.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that's a great take on it. And, you know, for what it's worth, we could break down the X's and O's. We could talk about aspirations and what's to come and what they need to work on. But all in all, that was a win. That was a tremendous win for college football, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that, let me tell you something. On a holiday evening where you get to hang out and do different things. I mean, my house is all over the place, right? Like, everybody started in front of the TV watching football. Next thing you know, you got people out on the back playing Monopoly. You got people over here playing, you know, video games. You got people over here, you know, eating food. Yeah, I got that many people in my house.
Thanks for the invite. You hear that, Brady?
Yeah,
had a nice rager. We weren't there.
It's a little harder for me to get there.
Just pair up with me.
I did some really, really nice chicken. I made some nice chicken. I baked it first, and then, you know, I honey barbecued it up with my special honey barbecue mixture, and then I let it sit in the refrigerator for about 25 minutes, and then I grilled it up, and I put it on some rice, so it was was really good. But I digress. The point of the matter is that there were so many different things that could have took place after you had an entire slate of games that were exciting. That Georgia game, Georgia-Clemson game, exciting. There were so many exciting football games that had taken place, you know, the day before heading into a Sunday game. And you get inundated with thinking that, oh, there's no NFL on. You know, like, I'll find something else simple to do, da-da-da, blah-za-blah. Couple games, come on, you're watching this game, and you watched all four quarters.
Yeah.
And that's why you even had the chance to even get upset at hearing Chip Kelly.
No, jeez.
The hair coach Kelly. He's not upset at all. But to even hear those quotes to begin with, like, let's take a step back and let's just look at the fact that Florida State and Notre Dame being in a competitive game in a prime time slot delivered.
Yes.
It was a delivery.
I mean, it would have been nice if it would have delivered, you know, -7.5. That would have been sweet, wouldn't it?
That's the frustration for all those who laid the 7 points or 7.5, depending on where you were.
God forbid.
Is when they were up 18.
Yeah. God
you were
forbid.
Beside yourself with the defense, with just, I mean, it was just. It,
like, but listen, I understand the humidity. Michael Mayer looked like his pants were no longer gold. Like it looked like.
Well, that's one of those days where you could just go ahead and let it go. Like, if you had to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, 100%.
You can 100%. Let it go and no one's going to know. Like, that's 100%. The secret. That's the secret, LeVar. Mm. Like, a lot of those guys, when they were out there in those gold pants, baby, they just let it go.
Yeah, that's LeVar, man.
That's why you go to Notre Dame. Not for the helmets, not for the tradition.
Hold on.
To be able to just let it go during the game.
Let it go, man.
It's safe.
Hey, so let me ask you this, because I had a number of bets out. If you and me are betting between Penn State and Notre Dame playing one another, obviously one side's going to be favored. Are you betting straight up, or are you giving points?
Ooh, that's a good one.
Because a bunch of these Florida State guys were like, no, I want the points. I was like, so you're willing.
No, I would bet straight up. Anytime I would bet anybody. Like, oh, you're talking like if we're boys and we're betting.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm betting straight up. I'm not giving you no points. Because, like, that to give points is to qualify that we're better or you're better and I want the points. Yeah. Like, nah, I'm betting you. Like, we're going to beat you. Like, we're going to win.
So Brian McFadden, Danny Cannell, both Florida State alums, we had separate bets, and they both wanted points. And I'm like, man, that really sits well with you? Like, you winning a bet even though your team lost?
Yeah, that's no good.
So we had two separate bets. There was a bet on the point spread, then there was a bet straight up. And so the bet straight up is those guys have to wear my jersey doing some TV hits coming up here in the next week or so. So I got to find a way of getting my jersey to both of them, but we'll figure it out.
It is the Dan Patrick Show. LeVar Arrington, hey. Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox with you here on Fox Sports Radio. You can hang out with us as always on the iHeartRadio app. But coming up next, let's not bury the lead here. This is one of the great moments in recent sports history. We are going to get into all of that for you. It's next here on The Dan Patrick Show.
Thanks for listening to The Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 to noon Eastern or 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for The Dan Patrick Show at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR. Or stream us live on the Peacock app.
So the dominance continues. It continues, and it apparently is not anywhere close to being over. We will get into all of that here coming up in just a couple of moments from now. It is the Dan Patrick Show here, Fox Sports Radio. He's LeVar Arrington. That guy's Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. You can hang out with us as always on the iHeartRadio app and wherever you are making us a part of your Monday morning. Happy Labor Day to you and yours, and we will take you all the way up until noon Eastern time, 9 a.m. Pacific here on Fox Sports Radio. A couple of fired up D1 superstars. LeVar Arrington's Penn State Nittany Lions go into Camp Randall and get it done. Brady Quinn's Notre Dame Fighting Irish get it done against Florida State. You guys got to be in a hell of a mood coming into this week here, huh?
Yeah.
Fired up.
Yeah.
I wish I felt a little better about it. I mean, if it would have been one of those deals where they came back to win, I would have felt better about it. I think giving up the lead that they did, it was frustrating, especially as when you're a touchdown favorite, you're expecting to win. So that's the hard thing for me. I would have really liked to see them cover for some of the bets that I had out there.
Yeah, well, listen, I mean, that's all right. I mean, look, but you did the straight-up bet, and I like how you were able to talk people into doing a straight-up bet and getting Florida State fans to not accept the 7.5 points. I do like how you swindled them into making sure that you did a straight-up bet. Because, you know, if they were smart asking for the points. I mean, that was a smart play by them, but you refused to just give them the points, and so you got them to do a straight-up bet, and that's why they've got to wear your jersey. I think that's a good move.
Yeah, it's kind of pathetic, though, that you could brag about winning a bet even though your team lost.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I draw the line. I'm like, yeah, I just wouldn't make the bet. If my team was like a 20-point underdog, I just, you know, I wouldn't make the bet. I wouldn't say, oh, I'm going to bet you straight up. I'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to make the bet. I don't feel too good about this.
Well, speaking of blowouts, when's Alabama not going to be good? Like, is that ever going to happen? Is Alabama ever
going to just... Nick Saban leaves.
Yeah, okay. Like, it's unbelievable.
They are going to fall off the face of the planet when Nick Saban leaves. But until then, get used to it.
They're unbelievable, man. And look, you got to give Brady Quinn credit. He was on the air. I thought he was well, listen, I'll be honest with you. I thought, man, you got to get a life. He actually sat and watched the Alabama spring game. and came on the air afterwards. This true story. It came on the air afterwards when we were working radio together on Fox Sports Radio and said, listen, I know I watched the spring game. I know. Knew he was going to get his balls broken, but came out and said, Bryce Young's going to be the Heisman Trophy winner. Said, Bryce Young, I'm telling you, he's the next star quarterback in college football. And we are one game into the season, Brady, and he looks legit like the real deal. So a round of applause because you actually called that. You called your shot. I got to give you credit, man.
I mean, hold on now.
I got to give him credit.
Hold on.
We're a week in.
Brady is a super brilliant mind, no doubt about it. But, dude, Bryce Young has been lighting it up for a while.
Yes, in high school football.
I mean, not just high school football, on a national schedule in high school football. I mean, to come out of the Monarchs program, out of modern day, is highly touted. They were saying that he basically is probably the best quarterback to ever leave modern day. And yes, if you get some time to go Google or Wikipedia quarterbacks from modern day, they got a pretty good good stable of guys. So going to Alabama, what did we say they have? How many years of the top number? What did you say it was, Brady?
It's 9 of the last 11, and the 2 years they were second and fifth. And actually, it actually gets worse. If you go back even further, I think through 14 years, they've never been outside the top five. They weren't number one.
As far as recruiting classes. Like, yes.
Last year's class was the highest ever since they've been ranking these recruiting classes.
Let me give you like an example. Like, let me give you a visual, right? That's like being in pitch black darkness, right? And every other team, you're jumping off of the roof of a home. And you're hoping that you land in a hot tub, right? You want to land in the hot tub, not get jacked up, not miss the hot tub.
Right, yes.
This is like jumping off of a roof and there's an entire deep sea ocean beneath you. You're not going to miss. You jump, I know I'm hitting water. You jump some of these other programs, you might hit concrete, right? You are not – Alabama is a can't miss program at this point in time. It's not about what Alabama's going to do. It's about what other players are going to do when they realize they're never going to play for Alabama. That's to me, that's more of the storyline that's surrounding Alabama, because all of these kids can't play. Brady, you ever hear the story? You ever hear this theory that coaches will recruit and get high draft or high recruiting classes, star kids, and some of them, they have no intentions of playing. They just get them on the team so that they don't have to play against them. Did you ever hear that theory?
they stash them, of course.
Right?
Of course.
Isn't that the craziest thing? Like, I have no intentions of playing all of these guys, but I'm going to get as many of them as I can because I don't want them to go somewhere else and develop at a rival school, a competitive school.
Well, and it works for Alabama because you showcase – Jalen Hurts, Mac Jones, and Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah.
And because obviously the quarterback position is the most important. And I think if you can convince guys to say, look, you don't need to come here and play more than 1 year in order to be a first round pick and in order to be a starter week one in the NFL as a rookie, because Mac Jones is doing it. You know, Tua Tagovailoa was able to play through injuries and go and do it. I mean, they've got every recruiting pitch you could imagine. And, oh, by the way, we've won 6 of the last 12 national championships. So that kind of plays a factor, too. But here's the reality. Is the comments I made about Bryce Young had nothing to do with modern day. There's plenty of kids who have been highly recruited. I mean, Spencer Rattler's the betting favorite. DJ Uiagalelei was the second favorite. Bryce Young,
he came up short.
He's the third as far as odds are for the Heisman, at least before week one. And that had more to do with what you're saying about Alabama than anything we've seen from Bryce Young.
True.
Because I would say this, like if you were watching college football this year, and I think a lot of people would say this on social media, which I hate to reference that, but there was some truth to this. We built up a lot of quarterbacks in the offseason, and they did not look very good in week one. And the truth is, that's okay. That's okay. But if this is where this young man, if this is his starting point, what we saw him do versus Miami, then it's scary to think what's to come later on this season. I mean, they play Mercer this weekend. Lord have mercy on Mercer.
Yeah.
Because that is – I don't know that Bryce Young will play more than a quarter. I would be shocked if he played into the second half at all, maybe even in the second quarter. Like, it might look like he goes 13 for 14 with three touchdowns. I mean, literally in the first quarter, and that's it. Get the next guy in there so you don't potentially get him hurt. But I just, you know, there's something about this kid, and I said it on TV, he reminds me of Russell Wilson. It's his poise, his accuracy, and he's not very tall.
No,
and obviously he's young, so he can fill out some. But it's the way he maneuvers the pocket and his feel for windows and everything else. He's like a weird combination of, I think, what Russell was as a quarterback, and then a little bit of Tua as far as what he can do creatively to make things happen if they're not there. But I don't know that he's going to need to with the talent that he's got out around him.
The one thing about Alabama is they consistently have created mismatches up front. I mean, their offensive line is so dominant every single year. It's never truly ever, that I can recall, been in questioning. Their defensive line always shows up, and you always have some round twos on their defensive front. And we all know the games are won in the trenches. And Alabama has done such an amazing job of making sure that they're stockpiling the type of guys. And they get going early, man. They get them going early. I do an eighth grade all-star game. And one of the kids that was in our game was 6'3", three-quarters, three-fourths. He's pushing 6'4". 320 pounds. And he was yoked
Jesus.
Up in the eighth grade, and he had already been offered to Alabama.
So he's 14 years old, probably.
He was 14 at the time. He's a senior this year.
6'3", and how much is he?
You'll hear about him. His name is Jaheim Otis.
Jesus.
You look him up. Ooh. But they get these kids, and they find them early. They find them early, man. 6'3", 320, 330 in the seventh grade. In the eighth grade was when I had him. And he was a pitcher. He was a swing three playing basketball. Kid's an athlete. Like not 6'3", 320, 330, sloppy. I'm talking like what you said when you saw AK Brady, like, where did you come from? I need your birth certificate. I need your backup birth certificate.
I wasn't trying to make any accusations.
I need your driver's license.
He just walked by, and I was like, man, he looks like a more grown-ass man than I do. I got three kids over here. I'm looking at him going, I don't want any piece of that.
Hey, that kid's in the eighth grade. I said, look, we need your driver's license. We need your birth certificates, the original copy. We need your passport. We need everything that shows that you're over 16. Y'all didn't catch that.
Well, it's not
16.
So, is it just area scouting? Is that what this comes down to? They've just got area scouts that all.
No,
over the,
what like, it comes down to is people seek you out when you're the best. People want to be surrounded with the best.
And
I want to win.
And if Alabama's not recruiting you, you look at yourself and go, what am I doing wrong?
So the minute they start recruiting you or somebody tells you, like in this kid,
this kid is
in Mississippi. Like, think about this, fellas.
Yeah.
You think about blue chips, right? The way they found Neon Bordeaux. You remember when they found Shaquille O'Neal?
Yes.
Take a boat across that
Algiers.
Little creek.
Algiers.
Make a left where the second cow is that's eating near the gate and all that, and then you'll see this red barn. He'll be in there. That's Jaheim Otis. Like when we got him in the game, no one could get a hold of the kid. He did no camps. He made no public appearances. The only content that you could see or find on him was him with Coach Saban. That was the only content you could find on him. And we found him. And we got him to come to the game. I had him at Penn State. We didn't get him.
I think the other thing about Bama and recruiting is it's validation.
Yeah.
So if you're that high school head coach and you could brag about it. Like, yeah, Nick Saban's recruiting this player. If Bama is recruiting a player on your team.
Now you could build your program.
Yeah. It validates you, especially for those programs that, you know, parochial schools, private schools that have the opportunity to recruit. It validates you. If you create that pipeline to Bama, it puts you on the map. So it works both ways. And even though, I know Nick Saban and his staff and everything, everyone grinds, but it validates you, I think, as a high school, as a coach, if you've developed a high school kid or use that as your pitch to other kids to get them to come to your high school. So it works both ways. And I think the other thing is that he can pitch. As much as it's about the success they have at the college level, you have two assistants who are former NFL head coaches in Bill O'Brien and Doug Marrone.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to come here and get coached by NFL coaches? I mean, whether you stay at Bama or not, that in and of itself for a sport that's highly developmental is huge, because you go and take that wherever you go. Even if you don't make it at Bama, can transfer and play immediately, you're gonna get that coaching for at least a year or two. So I look at it and say, like, they've got everything working for them, where even former NFL head coaches will step down a level and say, yeah, I'll go call plays for Nick Saban to go through the car wash, or I'll go coach their offensive line. I mean, Brian Daboll, who's going to be a head coach, the play caller for the Buffalo Bills, won a national championship and bounced right back to the NFL and is now going to be one of the hot names that will get a head coaching job after this season.
It's and you bring up the coaches. The program at Alabama, Nick Saban's program there, is so successful that unhirable coaches become hireable again.
Absolutely.
Just by being there.
Absolutely.
Think about it. Steve Sarkisian got fired for being a drunk. He's now the head coach of Texas.
Mike Locksley didn't do real well at New Mexico State. He goes there, and now he's the head coach of Maryland.
Lane Kiffin got fired on the tarmac. He's now the head coach at Ole Miss. Like all of these guys. Bill O'Brien's going to be head coach again.
It's borrowed time. And Nick Saban has built such the program, and the process is so perfected with him. These coaches are on borrowed time, and these players are on borrowed time.
You know what I love about Bill O'Brien, by the way, come down to the college level? Because there's obviously concern anytime you've got a changing coordinator or someone who's calling plays. But just to, like, come down to the college level, kick your feet up and go, you think I'm a bad coach, huh? Let me just show you a little bit how this works at the college level with some of my scheme and some of my ability as a play caller. I mean, he dropped the absolute hammer on Manny Diaz and Miami to the point where, like, if I'm a defensive coordinator, I hope I feel confident about my ability scheme-wise, because you are going to get abused by Bill O'Brien. And it's not just the talent they have. It's the way they go about scheming things open. I mean, Jameson Williams, the long touchdown that Bryce Young threw out of their own end zone, as much as it's his speed that helps get him open, it was also the bunch formation, the way they released the coverage that Miami was in, and how they went about getting him so wide open where you could have put that ball like a punt out there and he would have caught it and still be able to run for a touchdown. But it's almost like these NFL coaches are like, next time you guys want to keep looking at these college coaches coming to the NFL level, maybe there's a reason they keep recycling us up at the NFL level, because we come down here and it's child's play, because that's what it looked like versus Miami.
That is unbelievable. It is the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn with you here on FSR. Coming up next, though, here on the DP Show, there is some interesting comments. Somebody sticking up for one side of the football, and that person might surprise you. We'll get into that for you next here on Fox Sports Radio.
Thanks for listening to the Dan Patrick Show podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning, 9 until noon Eastern, 6 to 9 Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. And you can find us on the iHeartRadio app at FSR or stream us live on the Peacock app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is The Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of The Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week, explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Bet your ass it is. It's the Dan Patrick Show here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, LeVar Arrington, Brady Quinn with you here on FSR. By the way, later on this hour, we are going to do a little something that we normally do called the scraps. And somebody needs to be called out because, look, I'm not the most intelligent guy in the world. But I feel like it can spell certain words. They're not that hard. And apparently that was a difficult task for somebody in the world of sports.
Truly difficult.
Yeah, very difficult.
Someone should be looking at re-enrolling back into some type of night school of some sort.
Yeah,
at the least.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even think it takes that much. You know, just a quick Google search would help. But we will get to that here.
You know, we were talking about LeVar Burton, you know
yes,
what I mean?
Like,
reading Rainbow.
Yes, yeah, the Reading Rainbow stuff.
Like, I know computers and stuff and gadgets do everything for us nowadays. I understand that. But it is okay to be able to spell without using just typing in the first couple letters and it's spelling it for you. It is okay to spell.
Yeah,
you know?
And it is okay to learn. And speaking of which,
okay.
Did you hear Rob Ninkovich
intelligence.
Yeah, Rob Ninkovich, the former Patriots player, was, and listen, I don't know if he was drinking. It looked like he had an IPA. I mean, that looked like a 16-ounce.
Well, IPAs aren't truth serums, though. IPAs are fun serums.
Yes.
Yeah, no. Here's the problem. You just stepped into Jonas's world, okay?
Right. Yes.
He loves IPAs. Yeah. He will text me about IPAs, which I could give two craps about.
Yeah.
His opinion on IPAs or IPAs in general.
Yeah.
He will tout the alcohol per volume in an IPA just to make it sound like when he had two, it's okay for him to start drunk texting you after two IPAs because Jonas is a bit of a lightweight. But
please, that's nice.
Jonas, go on. Yeah, tell us what
good
you're about
friend,
to say.
Right? Hey, there's a good buddy right there. Good buddy. Yeah, my radio wife for 5 years. Yeah. Good buddy right there. I got your IPA right here, pal.
Oh.
Let me tell you something. So Rob Ninkovich was talking about the situation, and he said he heard from somebody in the room, quote unquote, in the building there at Foxborough that said that Cam Newton was being taught the playbook by Mac Jones, that Mac Jones was teaching him the playbook, which, look, it makes Cam look bad. He talked about, you know, the 2-minute drills and things like that and all of that came along with it. But Brady, I don't understand the point of it. Like, I don't understand the point of Cam's already gone. They've made their decision. Now they're moving on. It feels like we're piling on now. Like, this is piling on. Well, Cam wasn't this. He wasn't that. Cam's going to try and find a gig somewhere at some point, whether it's a starting job, which seems like a long shot now, or he's going to be a backup somewhere. It just feels like instead of talking about all of Cam's issues, people want to just continue to point back to, oh, he's flawed here. He's got this going on. It's the vaccine. It's his throwing motion. It's all this other stuff. And I think they fail to forget or remember this was a close decision and a close call for the Patriots. And as you pointed out, this was Cam Newton that asked for his release because he wanted to go somewhere else.
Yeah, I think when people are sitting there saying, well, you know, why is he a free agent and all that? I think it had more to do with Cam not wanting to be there than maybe the Patriots asking him to go. Now, maybe they didn't want to have to deal with a strong personality as a backup. But again, if he doesn't want to be there, they're not going to force him to be there. Look, the reality is the writing was on the wall. As soon as they took Mac Jones where they did in the first round, you knew he was at some point going to play this year. So it was only a matter of time. And I think what Rob Ninkovich and others are trying to do is trying to make sense of the decision for him to start and play now. Like, that's the surprising thing is, why now? You know, are you drawing upon what happened with whatever happened, you know, during that COVID mishap, if you will? Is it more, did it more have to do with how he performed and played in camp versus Mac Jones, who I had a scout from the New York Giants who was there for the joint practices between New England and you know, New York, and he said that he was unbelievable. He was the best player on the field between the two teams, was Mac Jones. He said it was very apparent to us, and so we weren't surprised after practicing against them the type of, you know, player that he was or where he's at. And the interesting thing about this is I'm kind of believing it that he may have been helping out Cam with some things only because of this. So when Mac Jones left high school, he enrolled early at Alabama in 2017. Who was the offensive coordinator at that time? It was Brian Daboll. Brian Daboll, who came from New England, is running that system, terminology, etc., and has worked with Josh McDaniels. So it's no surprise that he probably had that system ingrained in the back of his mind from spending more time over there over a year. And then on top of it, they may have kept a lot of those same concepts and things that they're doing up in New England, given Nick Saban's relationship with Bill Belichick. So I'm kind of buying it that there might have been some things that Mac Jones had said, hey, this is kind of how I see it, or this is how we did it, or this is how, you know, and maybe echoing some of the things that Josh McDaniels is trying to instill and install. Because Cam didn't get this type of offseason work with Josh McDaniels until this year, which was the same time as Mac Jones, which is somewhat of a level playing field. They had last year, obviously, you know, the game plans and so forth. But again, it's a little different when you actually go through an offseason install and you're learning. You're actually learning the why behind a lot of the plays within the offense.
Can I ask a question? And maybe this is a super, super dumb question. Is it insulting for someone to learn from somebody who's younger than them?
No.
Because to me, I learned from high school kids. I've learned from middle school kids. I've learned things from younger people throughout the course of my travels in life. And some of the most profound lessons I've learned have been from people that are younger than me.
Brady's younger than me. I learned about, you know, hard seltzers.
Brady's younger
like
than me, too. I'll tell you what.
Hey, did you see that right hook he just threw?
Not only did he take a shot at you, but he totally derailed my whole point.
I'm just saying.
Jonas shows that he can jack everything up if he wants to.
I'm just saying, like, he's younger than me. I didn't know about wine coolers until I met Brady. He's younger.
Wow.
I don't tell you.
All right. I'll give you. You won. You knocked me out. I am on the mat right now. I'm on the mat. Give me a 10 count.
He can drink me under the table.
LeVar, that's such a good point, man. You know, that is such a good point.
It's like we're trying to. It's like. To try to make this into a thing where you're questioning his intelligence ultimately comes back on the person who did it as really an indictment on yours. Because if the philosophy is that somebody has to be older or better than you to be able to teach you, then you have missed out on what learning truly represents, right? Like when you're talking about wisdom. Now, you get wisdom from older people because wisdom is based off of experiences, right? Now, if Rob had said some stuff like, you know, like Mac is wiser and here's why he's wiser and what it is that he's doing, that's kind of a different conversation. But to act as though like there's something that maybe is wrong with Cam because Mac was able to help him with the playbook or was able to give him some clarity on how to run the 2-minute drill. I just find it to be interesting because in an attempt to maybe diminish or downplay what Cam represents, you're only doing that to yourself. Like you had how many good seasons as a player? How good were you as a player? You know what I mean? Like when you start doing that, when you start calling out and pulling out people's resumes and calling into question what their worth is, you know, you got to be prepared to understand that people are going to take a look at you, too. Like, if Tom Brady said that, I'm going to be like, hey, whatever Tom said, I'm riding with. You know, I don't have the credibility of talking about success the way that someone like Tom Brady does. But not Rob. I don't even know his name real well. Ninkovich.
Ninkovich, yeah.
I know he had some good moments for the team. I didn't even know if he was still on the team or not on the team. I didn't know if he was still in the league or not in the league. Like, I don't even really know him that well. I saw him do pretty well at times. Is he a Pro Bowler? Is he? Let's look him up.
I don't believe.
Is he an All Pro?
I don't believe so.
Was he a number one draft pick? Is he a national champ? Like, what is his accolades to be chumming it up and going, you know, into national news for a quote about how he was helping, or Mac Jones was helping Cam Newton? You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
just seems kind of strange to me.
I'm with you on that. I do think the narrative that you can't learn from someone younger than you is one that it is out there. It seems like, especially in business, I think that's one of the things like business leaders are really afraid of. Yeah. They feel threatened by that.
Of course.
Coaches feel threatened by it.
Of course.
You have a player who brings up a good question, or when he questions why you're doing something,
and you don't have an answer for it.
That usually the reaction is like, I'm going to get mad or yell at this dude instead of being like, oh, maybe this kid might know something or see it differently than I do, and he can explain it better than I can. Like, I think that happens all the time in coaching
now,
in the business
absolutely,
world.
Absolutely, Brady. Absolutely.
I'll say this, though, about Rob, because I know him a little bit. I don't know that he was trying to come off malicious with this. I think maybe, like everyone else, you're just trying to make sense of it. Because, look, I was wrong. I thought Cam Newton, no matter what, was going to be the day one starter, week one. I thought that gives them the best shot out of the gate. I was wrong. And so I'm still trying to make sense and rationalize why, you know, they wouldn't. Like, my question is more this now. It's like, well, if you're going to do this, then why aren't we questioning Bill Belichick and just releasing Cam Newton back during OTAs and letting Mac Jones get all the reps? Like, why did you waste any reps on a guy who's no longer going to be with your team? Like, is it because he's so great, he's Bill Belichick, that you can't do that? Like, we questioned it with Urban Meyer. And I realize Cam Newton, who's a former MVP and has been to a Super Bowl, has had a much greater career than Gardner Minshew. But that's not the point of the conversation.
That is not the point. Right.
The point is reps.
Yeah.
And the point is you're willing to question one guy because he's just got to the NFL, but you're not willing to question the other guy because he's been arguably the greatest coach of all time. So I don't know that he's coming off in a malicious way, and he may be one of those people who are like, yeah, I don't feel like I can learn something, or maybe he's never learned something from someone younger than him, where, look, I learn stuff from my kids every day. My daughter just told me that when dogs die, they turn into wolves. And she just had an elaborate conversation.
That's that Twilight
about
series.
That.
Don't worry about that. I get it too.
She's 5 years old.
I've heard
I was
about
like, well,
imprinting
I said,
and everything.
Baby, I didn't know that, but I guess I've got to figure out what to do with our dog Bella when she passes, because she's gonna be looking to eat you, and then that scared her a little bit. So.
That scared her.
Yeah.
You know,
turn the conversation.
I'll say this because you've given me some perspective. If he was trying to explain to, because a lot of what people were using as reasoning as to why Cam was going to start was Mac may not be ready to go.
Yeah.
Mac may not have a handle on the offense or have a handle on running the team the way that he needs to as a starter.
And it's not like Cam played bad in the preseason.
Yeah, but I guess if to take the perspective of what Brady just gave, maybe you can look at it from the vantage point of, I'm telling you, you can't use that reasoning as to why Cam should be starting, is that he's ahead of Mac Jones in terms of he's been there a little bit longer, he's got a season under his belt. If the guy is actually understanding of the offense is so high that he's actually assisting the starting quarterback with certain aspects of this part of the offense, certain aspects of that part of the 2-minute drill, then it's justified to say it's okay to make a move forward into the future, knowing that Cam is not the future. We all know that Cam was not going to be the long-term answer for this team. So maybe that's the perspective of it, and maybe I'm being a tad bit too, you know, kind of hard on Rob in terms of what his accolades are to even come out his face like that. But I mean, again, I don't think that there should be any indictment or any type of saying there's something wrong with Cam or someone who actually learns from a younger guy about something that, you know, can help them with their career. You know, I just don't.
I mean,
I think if you're going to be hard on anything, you know, be hard on people who really go out of their way to text you stuff about IPAs.
Yeah.
Like that would be that individual is the type of person.
I don't disagree.
Who wants that guy in their life? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I disagree.
You're a terrible human being. Huh? You are a terrible human being.
Next time you test me on IPAs on air, I'll get you.
You don't talk about my IPAs.
I'll show you.
Just a terrible human being, Brady Quinn is. So let me ask you this, though, Brady, because you've talked about this before, that people don't understand that have never played the quarterback position how difficult it is to learn a new playbook. Just how much goes into it. So if Mac Jones sort of had an understanding of this playbook and had basically a 4-year head start on this playbook, and Cam Newton just got there last year, it stands to reason that Mac Jones would know this playbook and this offense better than Cam Newton, right? I mean, if they're similar in concepts, and Cam's been playing in Carolina for however long he was there, 10 years or whatever it was, it's not that far-fetched to think, well, of course Mac Jones would know this offense better because he's been around it longer.
Yeah, and the other thing is about offense is, even if it's similar terminology, like how Charlie Weiss called plays and his philosophy when I was with him at Notre Dame was different than when I got with Josh McDaniels in Denver. Like, they looked at red zone in a drastically different way. You know, Charlie's system, when you got down in that portion of the field, you would still run the football, but you were taking shots, play action shots, what a lot of people would call run action, where you're actually telling the offensive line to block the run. Like, they are literally trying to make it look like it's a running play.
It's supposed to. I love that.
And to try to fool LeVar.
Yes.
Now, there's play action, there's run action. Down in that area of the field, we would have run action because if they were going to blitz, we knew it was going to be an all-out blitz. So I'm audibling anyway to a 50 protection, meaning like a 7-man max protection. And then I've got to check the route so I get the ball out quick. But down there, I was basically protected by the action of the actual run blocking and my fake.
Yeah.
My fake, if there's a guy free, my fake is going to sell it so hard that he's not going to be able to have time to react before I throw the football. And so that was Charlie Weiss's philosophy with all these different pop passes, we called them, that we had. With Josh McDaniels, he liked to spread it out. He would put you in empty, and he would say, I'm going to put a running back or tight end outside the formation, and that's going to tell you whether it's man or zone, and it's going to tell you whether they're pressuring or not.
Mm-hmm.
And he would literally, just from that formation, and then you'd bring him back into the backfield. And based on what type of coverage you were getting or pressure you were getting, you would either go with the play you had, check to something else, check the protection, check the routes, all of that. And so just in that one system where all the terminology is the same, you can have different philosophies of how you go about actually executing that offense. And then, mind you, you could have the entirely same philosophy, but call it something completely different. You know, like, you use concepts and the numbers to essentially get your play call out. And people use it for different things, like with Charlie Weiss's system or the New England system. A lot of times they'll use numbers, you know, 0, 1, 2, 3, etc., to create their formation. So 0 is I write in other offenses. So that just gives you an example of how different things can sound or be when you run basically a different language or a different offense.
Yeah,
I just, the whole conversation about quarterbacks. We do have another little update here. David Coley of the Houston Texans. He is the head coach of the Texans. What a dream job for him, by the way.
Dream job. He got head coaching job.
Tyrod Taylor has been named the starting quarterback. So just a heads up there, Brady. You know, so Tyrod Taylor is going to be the starting quarterback for the Houston Texans.
I mean, he gives them the best. Oh,
he gives them a
chance. He gives them the best chance. I've got a lot of respect for Tyrod.
Yeah, he gives them a chance.
I think he, you know, he doesn't turn the football over. He's very capable of throwing, and he'll take off and hurt you with his legs. So I think, like, they're a sneaky team that when you look at that division with the questions in Indianapolis, not knowing what to expect in Jacksonville, you know, the third preseason game looked great. The other two didn't. They might not be as bad as I think everyone's kind of anticipating, or at least maybe that's my anticipation. I don't know.
So Deshaun's just going to sit there. Just going to hang out.
That's what's going to happen.
You know, just going to hang out and
super,
relax.
Super,
you
know? Super well paid. Just sit there and hang out.
Just hang out. We're just going to, like, I mean.
Hey, Brady.
What's the point? Yeah. Why didn't you just play him?
Do you think that they're waiting on something to hit to be able to go after the money and get back retroactive money? Like, in terms of if this goes 8 weeks or 9 weeks before something hits, do you feel as though they're willing to let him sit and then come back and get the money after it comes out?
I think what has to happen is they could technically get back some money or void out the guarantees if he's charged. I think then they can go into that conduct detrimental to the team. And that's where I think this would go. I think the Texans don't want to move him now because they're not getting the offer for him that they'd like. And so they're willing to be patient because Nick Caserio doesn't want to take a bad deal for a guy who's young, under contract, and in his prime.
Well, then that means they have to pay him then.
They're going to pay him. But let's say, for example, some of these allegations, some of the civil lawsuits, the criminal lawsuits turn into a charge.
Yes.
And he gets charged.
Yes.
That's where I think then.
Do you think they will go after what he's going to miss or what he's
correct.
Going to get for these games?
Correct.
You see what I'm saying?
There's that language in all those contracts where they might pay him and then come back and take back those monies that are owed to him.
Right. Yep. That's why.
What a disaster.
I also wonder, though, if they're waiting on a settlement because no one's done anything.
Yeah.
Like the NFL hasn't. And not that they necessarily need to intervene, but I think if you put them on the exempt list, it just cleans things up for the time being for everyone involved. And so my only thought is they have to be thinking that there's the potential chance that there will be a settlement at some point in time, and they want to wait to see if they can't figure this out that way. Because we know the legal system is going to take a long time. And so that's the only thing I've got in the back of my mind.
I mean, does Deshaun even show up to practices? Does he show up to practice? When he's at the games, where's he watching it from? Like, is he up in the press box? Is he on the sidelines? Does he dress for these games? Is he the emergency quarterback? Like,
I bet you he won't even go to the stadium.
At all, at any point.
At all.
Well, yeah, I wouldn't want him to if I'm the team for
right.
this reason.
That's
yeah.
a distraction.
It's a distraction, but if he got hurt or did something, like, they would kind of be liable, right?
Oof.
Like, it's on their property. Like, I would almost rather him be away from the facility if anything ever happened where they wouldn't be on the hook for it.
Oh. They'll be relaxed.
I mean, I know that sounds grimy, but
yeah,
I'll
leave it alone.
I mean, there's a plethora of reasons as to why he shouldn't be at the game, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
that's right. Just, yeah,
but then you get concerned about, like, what he's doing in his free time if he's not there.
Yeah. No.
I mean,
very relaxing.
Do you condition him like how they condition guys in college when they didn't practice? You know, the air bike and all that? We know you can't practice because you're injured, but we're going to make sure we condition you in a way where you think about if injuries are better or worse than practicing.
Overrun them?
Yeah. Practicing injured is more important or better, more feasible, the risk versus reward. Like, I'm hurt. Do I say I'm hurt enough where I can't practice or do I practice?
It's like the part on Billy Madison where he wants to stay home from school and the maid says, well, you could stay home and help me shave my armpits. Mm. And he's like, all right, I'm going to school. Like, he just realized the alternative was not something he was into.
The air bike has made cowards of us all in practice, in practice conditioning.
You have to worry, though, about, like, if there was an injury that occurred, then again, the type of treatment he would be getting received. You know.
Yeah, that is true.
Yeah, might need some soft tissue work. Yeah. Got to be careful about that.
Oh, well, you know, he would specialize and have the database of who could help that soft tissue situation, right?
By the way, I did hear that one of the aliases he uses at hotel rooms is Charlie Horse.
I got that. That was the perfect time for a sound bite.
Yeah,
like, honestly, for a sound effect of some sort or whatever. You know,
it's
that
so bad.
It was really bad.
Hey, Michael Vick used Ron Mexico. What do you want from me? All right,
is that true?
Yeah, Lane Kiffin's got Joey Freshwater. All right, so Deshaun. Watson uses Charlie Horse. I don't know.
Joey Freshwater sounds like, I don't know. Yeah. He sounds like a slimy guy in South Florida. I could actually
Joey
see that.
Joey Freshwater.
That's a great
see that
name,
on a business
man.
Card.
I mean, at least you would think
name.
That he's fresh, not dirty.
It's a good name, man.
You know, if you said Johnny Dirty Water, that would hit differently,
Johnny Depth. You know,
death water.
Yeah. All right. It is the Dan Patrick Show. He's LeVar Arrington. That guy's Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox here on FSR. Coming up next, though, there is somebody in the world of sports who apparently is not really good at spelling. Mm. We will have the latest on that next here on the Dan Patrick Show.